Okay. So last week's parasha, the Torah tells us, "Le'savasho gedi v'chalev imoi," that you're not allowed to cook an animal in its mother's milk. And this pasuk, of course, appears three times throughout the Torah. Once in last week's parasha, in Parashas Mishpatim, again in Parashas Kisisa, and a third time in Parashas Re'eh. And Rabbeinu Bachya over here, Aisav from the Sheik, quotes from the Gemara Masech Leschun, Kuftez Vavim Mebeis, that the reason why it appears three times is to teach us that there are three parts to the Isser of Basar B'Chalav. One is Echad Isser Achila, you're not allowed to eat the two together. Echad Isser Hanoi, you're not allowed to benefit from the mixture of the two together. Echad Isser Bishul, you're not allowed to cook the two together in the first place. If it applies to not only cooking Basar B'Chalav, but also eating and enjoying, why does the Torah phrase it as Lo Savasho Gedi B'Chalev Imoi? Why doesn't it phrase it as an Isser Achila? Right? If it applies not only to Isser Bishul, why is the phrase as an Isser Bishul all three times? So the Rabbeinu Bachya explains, based on something he heard from his Rebbe, which first appears in the Tshuvas HaRashba, who explains this phenomenon based on the Gemara, which tells us that Basar B'Chalav is only Derech Bishul Asra Torah. What that means is that if you eat milk and meat together, but they are not cooked together, I take salami and hard cheese and put it together in a sandwich, that's not Basar B'Chalav D'Oraisa. It's Asmi D'Rabbanan, and of course, we keep Isurim D'Rabbanan too, but it's not Basar B'Chalav D'Oraisa. Basar B'Chalav D'Oraisa is only if the two are cooked together. So that's why the Pasuk phrases this as an Isur Bishul, even though it includes much more than an Isur Bishul. It includes an Isur Achil and Isur Anoa, but if the two are not cooked together, then you don't have the Isur in the first place. That's why many, Rav Salvechik used to be fond of pointing out that many people make a mistake in terms of the way that they phrase the Isur. They call Basar V'Chalav, when, you know, like milk and meat, like we would translate it, but it's really not milk and meat, it's milk in meat, Basar B'Chalav. Meaning it's absorbed with the meat is absorbed with the flavor of the milk, or the milk is absorbed with the flavor of the meat, because the two have been cooked together. So that part of the pasuk is not to be taken, you know, in a limiting fashion, as if the iser is only bishul, but that defines the iser that it's only if the two are cooked together. Of course, it doesn't have to be cooked in its mother's milk, even though the pasuk says b'chalev imo. It's in mother's milk. The Rishonim explained Dibar Kasa Behoiva. The Torahs are only discussing that which is typically found, which is its mother's milk. It's certainly around. But of course, it could be other milk as well. Some explain, no, that this is coming to teach us you can spoil a child if you give him too much, you know, of its mother's milk, meaning things can go bad if you spoil a child with too much love and too much affection. Okay, fine, but that's here this is not the limiting, it doesn't have to be in its mother's milk. But the first part of the pasuk goes, Savasho Gedi. Gedi, of course, is a kosher animal, so to the Isser Basar B'Chalav, it's a goat, but Isser Basar B'Chalav only applies to kosher animals. It doesn't have to be slaughtered correctly, but it has to be a kosher animal. You know, Basar B'Chalav wouldn't apply to horse meat or to camel meat or to pig meat. Basar B'Chalav only applies to meat of a kosher animal, even if it wasn't necessarily slaughtered properly. Okay, so there's three parts of this of Basar B'Chalav. That's why it's repeated three times. Echad Isser Achila, Echad Isser Anoa, Echad Isser Bishul. Why does the Torah always couch it in terms of Bishul? In order to teach us that only Derech Bishul Asra Torah, it's only if the two are indeed cooked together. However, what's interesting is, when the Gemara tells us about these three prohibitions, it puts Achila first. Echad Isser Achila, Echad Isser Anoa, Echad Isser Bishul. Maybe because, you know, most of the things we have in the Torah are Isser Achila, not Isser Bishul, so that's like, I guess, the thing we'd be most comfortable with. Is Echad Isser Achila, it's not unusual at all. Isser Hanoa and Isser Bishul are somewhat unusual. But this, the fact that Achila is placed first in the Gemara becomes highlighted by the fact that Targum Unklas, every single time the Pasuk appears in the Chumash, Savash Gliba Chalevi Mung, he touches the Pasuk, Loi Seichlun. You should not eat it. Every single time, you should not eat it. You should not eat it. You should not eat it. Which seems to imply that perhaps the focus of the Isser Hanoa and the Isser Bishul is really to prevent us from coming to eat Basar B'Chalav. And this comes to a head in the Rambam, Perek Aleph of Hilchos Tumas, Meis Halacha Beis, really out of the context of Machalas Asuros. But the Rambam is discussing Hilchos Tumah. We know that there's three ways that Meis can be Matame a person. Either you touch the Meis, right, that's Maga, or you carry the mace, even if you don't touch the mace. Let's say I'm carrying him on a stretcher, but I'm not touching him. The third is if we're in the same room together, even if I'm not touching him or carrying him, that's called Tumas Oil. So what's interesting is that in Chumash, we only have Tumas Maga and Tumas Oiho with regards to a mace. It never mentions the fact that a mace is Metami Bemasa, if you carry it without touching it or being together in the same room. But we do have Tumas Masa with regards to something else. Anybody know what? Tumas Masa appears in the Torah, it appears with regards to Nevela, a carcass. Of course, it is not a prohibition for a Kohen to come in contact with a dead animal, but it would make you Tame if you were eating Kachem and Taharas, or Truma. So, a Nevela is Metame B'mas. Is a Nevela Metame B'ohel? No, that's unique to a mace. So, but it never says mas with regards to a mace. So the Rambam says, well, it's a kav chomer. If a nevela, which is not metame ba'oyo, is metame b'maso, so then when a maid, the Torah tells us a mace is metame ba'oyo, even more than the nevela meat, certainly it's metame b'maso as well. B'chlam l'sai mana. It's something that we could obviously infer. So the Rambam says, and the Torah does this often, that it will say things from which we could infer other things, because they're all, you know, they're implicitly included by the fact that if this is included, certainly that as well. And the example the Rambam gives is the Torah never states explicitly that it's prohibited to eat basar b'chalav. It just says lo savash u'galiv chalev imo three times. But says the Rambam, v'shasek me'israel achilas basar b'chalav v'isha asa b'feirish afilu b'shuloi. If you can't cook basar b'chalav, certainly you can't eat it. What kind of kavah chomer is that? Maybe the Torah said you can't cook basar b'chalav and had nothing to do with eating basar b'chalav. How does one necessarily follow from the other? So the Kesef Mishnah explains, must be the Rambam understood that the Isser Bishul of basar b'chalav is a precautionary measure lest we come to eat basar b'chalav. Ah, so now it makes sense. The Torah didn't randomly asar us from cooking, mixing different items in the world. The Torah told us not to eat basar b'chalav, and then the Torah told us as a precaution to prevent us from eating basar b'chalav, not to cook basar b'chalav. So therefore, says the Kesef Mishnah, shlo asra Torah levashel el kadei shlo yavo lecho, in order to prevent us from eating. This is, punctuated by the Gemara in Masechta Shkulin that tells us what is the shear bishul, meaning how much basar b'chalav do I have to cook in order to violate the issur of cooking basar b'chalav. So in eating, we know, right, what's usually the shear with regards to machalas asuros. If you want to, if you were looking to become Chayv Malkus for eating a Vela, you wanted to know what Malkus is like, so you would eat a Kizayas. So to hear, eating Basar B'chalav, presumably the shear is Kizayas. That's, Chaylan. If you eat prohibited fats, the shear is Kizayas.
Why is Shabbos different,
huh? Shabbos and Melachas have different shearim, depending on each Melacha.
By Bishul on Shabbos.
Bishul, do you have to cook a Kizayas?
Isn't it just anything?
Well, Bishul, you have and Shabbos, to be chayv like a chatas, how much do you have to cook? I don't remember. Is it kizayis?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
I don't think so. But that's not an issur achila, that's an issur bishul. Exactly.
But we learned this week that it depends.
Huh?
Issur achila for bishul and Shabbos.
You might be prohibited from eating it as a penalty, but it's not primarily a forbidden food.
It's not forbidden itself.
It's not in the category of forbidden foods. You wouldn't find Bishul B'Shabbos and Macholas Asuras in the Rambam, right? It's in Hilchos Shabbos. So to over here, meaning is Bishul Basar B'chalav like deserving of its own category, like an Isser Bishul, like Shabbos? Or is it like you're not allowed to eat Basar B'chalav, so as a precaution, you're not allowed to cook it either? In which case, the shear should be Kezias. What is the shear of cooking Basar B'chalav? The Gemara says it's going to say explicitly, we'll see in a second, is Kezias. So that implies, says the Chassam Sofer in his Chidushim of the school, and that implies that the Isser of cooking basar b'chalav is a precautionary measure lest one come to eat it. And Rabbi Yosef Engel brings this in his Sefer Lekach Tov, which he wrote when he was a young man, brings this as one of the sources that you find that sometimes the Torah itself installed precautions in order to prevent more severe or more extreme prohibitions. For example, the Avister Rav Nosson, he also brings this, comments on the first Mishnah of Masechta Sava, that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola said three things. Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, having Mesunim Bedin, don't issue judgments too quickly, create many Talmidim, and also Asiyei Siyag L'Teira, make protective boundaries, fences, take precautionary measures, lest one come to violate something more serious or something more egregious. So the Avister Rav Nosson says, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu models this behavior for us, this strategy in the Torah itself. Where do you find that the Torah itself took a precautionary measure? We find it in the parasha of Gilei Arayos, with a pasuk after listing us all the forbidden relationships of Parshas Achrimos. The Torah says, "Lisikravu legalis erva." You shouldn't even come close to being megala and erva, which Chazal understood includes all intimate interactions, chibuk v'nishuk, as well. And as we know, according to the Rambam, that's an isa midiraisa. The Rambam disagrees, but the Rambam feels that chibuk v'nishuk, affectionate, intimate, really, the Rambam says, derech taiva, lustful touching, is also in an intimate fashion, would also be isa midiraisa. Ah, but the Rambam says, that's obviously, what is the purpose of this isa? Lo sikravu legalai seva. So you shouldn't come close. You know, as a precautionary measure, lest something more serious occur, meaning relations itself. So this itself is a precautionary measure the Torah took in order to prevent something more egregious from occurring. So too, since the Kodesh Baruch Hu models that behavior for us, we should also use that as a model, say so good Torah, to make our own precautions, take our own, make our own boundaries, lest we come to do things that are more serious, more egregious. But you see that the Torah modeled this behavior for us. Another instance, just as an example, that Rabbi Yosef Engel brings, where we find that this notion exists, is with regards to chametz. Of course, on Pesach we have a mitzvah midrabbanon of bedikas chametz. You have to check your house for chametz. How come when it comes to shellfish, we don't find bedikas lobster or bedikas shrimp cocktail from our house? We don't find such a mitzvah. Mitzvah midrabbanon. Why not? So Ran says it's very obvious. There's no bedikas pork in our house. Why not? Because we don't have pork. Jewish people typically don't have pork or shrimp or lobster. I never heard of a Jew having a pet lobster in their house. We typically don't have these things. So, fine. So there's no reason to have bedikah. Chametz we have in our house all year long. Comes 8 days out of seven or 8 days out of the year. We have to get rid of it from the house. Oh, so we need bedikah to make sure it's fully gone. Okay, it says, well, okay. Because lo bedili minei, we're involved with it the whole year. Says the Ran over here. Ois Dalin. This is Daf Aleph in the Davim of the Rif from the Mizrach and Masechta Pesachim, and he says on the third line, "Ve'efshar Oid Shemipnei Tam Zehichmira Torah Boy Lavar Alav Bali Ro Bali Motzi." Maybe that's why the Torah said you can't even own chametz or see chametz that belongs to you on Pesach. Lo Yira Lachav Bali Motzi, Lo Yira Soar B'Chol Gvulecha. You're not allowed to see or to own chametz throughout all of Pesach. Why? 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 There's no Easter to own lobster. There's no Easter to own shrimp. You could have a pet lobster if you wanted. You can have a pet frog. It's not a kosher animal. You can have a pet fish that aren't kosher. No problem. Why can't you have a pet lobster? You can. So why can I own chametz on Pesach too? The answer is, says the Ram, because we're so used to eating chametz all year. If we're going to have it around, you might come to eat it. I'm not used to eating lobster. I'm not used to eating shrimp. So if I have a pet lobster, I'm not going to come to eat it for supper. I'm not going to eat a pet frog for supper. But if I have chametz in my house, I might come to eat it because the whole year long I'm used to eating it. So says the Ram, Bal Yiro Bal Motzi, which itself is an isa midoraisa. Nonetheless, perhaps the Torah only installed that as a precautionary measure, lest I come to eat chametz on Pesach, which is a more severe issue. Or mitzvah Tosef Shabbos. Tosef Shabbos is derived from Yom Kippurim, where the pasuk says, "V'nisem es nafshu seichem b'tishah l'chodesh b'erev me'erev b'erev." Right, so Yom Kippur begins already on the 9th of the month. On the 9th at night. If it, the 9th at night is the 10th, why doesn't it just say the 10th? So the Gemara says, Mikan Shemasivim Echol L'Kodesh. You have to add on, this Tosefes Yom Kippur, you have to add on a little bit before refraining from eating, a little bit before Yom Kippur, refrain from Halacha. From there we derive to Shabbos. That there's a mitzvah of Tosef Shabbos. Since it doesn't really say it by Shabbos, it says it by Yom Kippur, the Rambam denies that there's actually Tosef Shabbos. The Rambam feels that there's only Tosef Yom Kippur, but there's no mitzvah of Tosef Shabbos at all. Rov Rishonim disagree with the Rambam, and they feel if it exists by Yom Kippur, it exists by Shabbos, and there's a mitzvah of Tosef Shabbos in Midaraisa. Why do you have to have Tosef Shabbos? So the Medrash says in Parshas Bereishis, because when Shabbos came in, the first Shabbos of Bereishis, Kodesh Baruch Hu stopped from doing Malacha the second, right? The millisecond, the instant that Shabbos came in, Kodesh Baruch Hu stopped doing Malacha, but he was in the middle of doing Malacha up until the last moment. However, Klal Yisrael, which are human beings, we're not going to have the ability to refrain from doing Malacha at the moment Shabbos comes in. So we have to take a precautionary measure of having Tosefes Shabbos. Ah, but Tosefes Shabbos, according to Rav Rishonim, is a mitzvah midaraisa. Nonetheless, you see that sometimes Chazal, the Torah itself, installed precautionary measures lest we come to violate something more serious. So according to the Ketzef Mishnah, this is another example of that you're not allowed to cook basa b'chalav lest you come to eat it. Yeah.
Well, we said by, according to his opinion, on Pesach, we're afraid that we're going to eat the chametz because we're dealing with it, but in the basar b'chalav, it's not, we're not usually accustomed.
Adirabba, I think it fits perfectly. Why do we need an isa bisho, an isa noba basar b'chalav? Well, there's no isa bisho lobster, there's no isa bisho pork. Why is it isa bisho basar b'chalav? Because I'm not used the whole year to eating basar b'chalav, to eating pork. I'm not used to the whole year eating lobster. You have in your kitchen basar, you have in your kitchen chalav. You're used to eating these things. So the fact that now they had a bit of shidduch and we mixed the two together, I'm used to eating this steak. The steak was kosher a second ago. How did it become treif? So therefore, the Torah had to install a precaution lest you come to eat the basar b'chalav. Why? It's not the same as lobster. I eat this all the time. So in order to prevent, it just happens to now, it got mixed together with milk. So since I do have these things in my kitchen all the time, the Torah had to, and but just now the two got mixed together, I can't eat them. The Torah had to make a precautionary measure lest you come to eat it, that it's not only asar b'achila, it's asar in bishul as well. I happen to think it fits well. The question is though, you know, just parenthetical points, the last week of Shaivavim. But the Avos Reb Nosson, what's the example the Avos Reb Nosson brings of a siyog, a precautionary measure the Torah took in order to protect something more serious? Was not bishul basar b'chalav. It wasn't bali ro bali matzei. It was a sikr v'ulagal azerva. So Futner says, and it's quoting the Sefer Zikaron for Futner, the Pachat Yitzchak, that you see from here, we have to take more precautions in the area of arayos. We need precautions in all areas. Asay siyog l'Torah. We have to take greater precautions in the area of arayos. The pasuk says also in Parashas Achrimos, "Ushmartim is mishmarti." We should take precautions to the precautions. So the Gemara says in Masechtas Yevamos that "Asu mishmarisku mishmarti." This is the license that Chazal have to take precautionary measures. You know, don't ask an achri to do a malacha for you on Shabbos, lest you come to do it yourself. What gives Chazal the right to make such a gzera, this unto that, this because we're afraid of that, is because of this pasuk by Gilui Arayas, Ushmarti Mishmarti, Su Mishmarisku Mishmarti. Make boundaries, make fences. Why is it pasuk articulated with regards to Gilui Arayas? Of all the areas in the Torah, it doesn't say it by Shabbos, it doesn't say it by Shatnez, it doesn't say it by Ribis, it says it by Arayas. So again, Rav Futner says, you see from here that Asu Mishmarisu Mishmarti really applies most directly, it applies to all of Torah, but it really applies most poignantly, and it's emphasized with regards to the area of Arayas. So we need to take extra precautions in this area. Anyway, getting back. So Basar B'chalav, the Ketz Mishnah suggests, is what a further example of this, a Siyog D'Oraisa, a precaution that was installed by the Torah, even though it is an Isa Mid'Oraisa, not Mid'Rabbanan, to cook Basar B'chalav together, it's a precautionary measure lest you come to eat Basar B'chalav. Based on this suggestion of the Kesef Mishnah, the Poskim discussed the following situation. A person who is a scientist, maybe a food scientist, and he needs to test, you know, the dairy content of something or other. So in order to do that, he needs to cook milk together with meat. He never plans on eating it, right? Not a good idea to eat things, you know, from the laboratory that you're bringing, if you're a scientist, you bring home with you from work, right? That's not a good idea. But so no one plans on eating it. Can you cook them together in a laboratory scientific setting? Basar b'chalav, where no one plans on eating it. So Soloveitchik quoted the name of his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. But at a similar time, the same idea is discussed in the Tshuvas Dovid Meisharim. That was the Shabina Rav. It was the Rav in Yerushalayim. He was one of the greatest, most well-respected poskim in Yerushalayim in the last 150 years. So the Shabina Rav, who was there, he was the guy when Shlomo Zalman was growing up, and he was the older contemporary to Tzvi Pesach Frank, to Visit Zalman Meltzer, was the Shabina Rav. So Shabina Rav has in his Shuvah, the David Meisharim, based on this Kesef Mishnah, that yes, it's permitted. If no one plans on eating it, so the whole reason you now have to cook Basar B'chalav together, Kesef Mishnah told us, is a precautionary measure, lest you come to eat it. If no one plans on eating it, then it's permitted. He says, Yeshua Tzadik Sas, where you're cooking it, but you don't have in mind to eat it at all, so then what's the problem with cooking it? Your whole intention is just to test it. You're only testing it for milk and content, so you won't come to violate. There's no reason to suspect that you're going to come to eat it. This is all based on the Kesef Mishnah. The problem is, even if we accept the Kesef, there's really two problems. The first problem is, even if we accept the Kesef Mishnah, to start making nafkaminas lamaisa based on his suggestion, right? He's speculating. The Torah said you can't cook basar b'chalav. He says, why, as a precautionary measure, lest you come to eat it, because we are accustomed to having basar and chalav in our kitchens at the same time, like chametz. So we need precautionary measures. That might be. but it's speculative. So the Torah making nafkaminas lamaisa based on something that you speculated to be the reason for a mitzvah is a very dangerous thing. We typically don't do that. That's called darshin on time of the crow. That the pasuk says something, and we're going to speculate a reason, guess a reason what the mitzvah was given in the first place, and then we're going to start making nafkaminas, saying, well, if that's the reason for the mitzvah, it doesn't apply in X, Y, or Z. That's a dangerous concept. We typically paskin loy darshin on time of the crow. We can't speculate a reason for the mitzvahs and then regulate its application based on that reason. So that's why there were many who disagreed with this truth of the David Meisharim, his younger contemporary, Tzvi Pesach Frank and the Har Tzvi, disagreed. As is Rav Asher Weiss over here, Isaiah, in more recent times, he says, "Be'emes loy bekesef mishra sheyichto bazeh kol nafkamina." Kesef mishra suggested this as like a nice drasha and shul, but not that this should be. Start making nafkaminas, regulating the application of the mitzvah based on this reason. The low bar of our lashon aramim kemavur mistaber the came in the low darshin the time of the cry in bazen nafkamina lalocha. We can't start making nafkaminas lalocha and allowing scientists to cook basa b'chalav. This is an iser in the Torah, and even we can suspect or guess what the reason might be, but we can't regulate the application based on that. The other thing is, it could be the Kesef Mishnah. You know, there are others who disagree with the Kesef Mishnah, meaning maybe the whole purpose of Isha Basa B'chalav is not as a precautionary measure, lest you come to eat it. It is a separate Iser in the Torah. There are three parts here. Number one, you can't eat Basa B'chalav, you can't enjoy it, and you can't even cook it together, even if no one plans to eat it. So that's the Sefer HaChinuch. I apologize for not giving it to you on the Marmar Kaima. Sefer HaChinuch says that in this week's parashas Mishpatim, Mitzvah Tzadi Beis. Listen to Sefer HaChinuch. He's discussing what is the reason, as he often does, for the different mitzvahs. So he says, Misharashe HaMitzvah Zul Lefi HaDoyma Shehu Ke'inim HaShekasavnu B'mitzvahs Mechashefa. It's like the Isser of magic or witchcraft. There are certain things the Torah does not want us to mix together. Meaning, it's like kelayim. It's like mixing grapes and grain together. That's prohibited even if you don't come to eat it together. You're not allowed to mix them in your field. You're not allowed to mix different animals plow together with the two animals. So another one of the forbidden mixtures. In the Torah, kind of like a kelayim, is basa b'chalav. Ve'efshar, he says, she'taruves ha'basar b'chalav b'maisa ha'bishul yasivas isurim in yisaydahu. You're simply not allowed to mix these two things together. V'ksas ra'ila, okay. And he says, the isur, nira b'zeh she'ein isur ha'machmas nezek ha'chilas o'klau, rakshul o'naseh pu'ulas oisoy ha'taruves. It's not because you might come to eat it, you're simply not allowed to cause this mixture to take place. La'chakas oisoy inin shamarnu. In order to keep these two diametrically opposed forces together, some suggest, the Rakanti suggests in Chumash, that Basa represents Din, that's why it's red. Chalav represents Chesed, as opposed to the Basa, which represents Din. I don't know. Okay, maybe the two represent two different polar opposites of the Midas of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore the two should not be mixed together. But in which case, it has nothing to do with the fact that it's a precautionary measure, lest you come to eat it. And even if no one plans on eating it, you're simply not allowed to cook basa b'chalav together. So look over here. This seems to be the implication of the Ramah. Says Ramah, Oiskes, Yesh Oimrim, Da'asa lachlecha eis tachas kedera sho'ovdei kachovim. There were often Jews who served as household help in the homes of Nachrim. So let's say they would ask you, can you please cook something for supper? And they're asking you to cook basa b'chalav. Now, if it's horse meat, it would be permitted, but if it's a kosher animal, not chicken, of course, basa b'chalav is only the rabbanon, we paskin, but if it would be basar behema, cow, that was, ground up, they ask you to make beef parm, right? So you're cooking the beef together with Parmesan cheese, then you'll be cooking basa b'chalav. So are you allowed to do that? So the Ramah says no, and even if they put up the pot, you can't raise the flame underneath the pot because you're hastening the cooking. You're involved in the cooking of basa b'chalav, which is prohibited. Now, presumably, you don't plan to eat this. The food isn't kosher. You're not going to eat it. It was meat from the AMP, meat from the ShopRite. You're not going to eat that meat. So it's cow meat, yes, but it wasn't slaughtered properly. So you're not going to eat it. And they're not inviting you to eat it. It doesn't belong to you. Nonetheless, it's still prohibited to cook the basa b'chalav. So you see that it's an independent prohibition not to cook basa b'chalav. But the Sefer Charedim says as well, Shalom Lavasha Basa B'chalav over here always test. Afiu ain't a roitza la achlo el achila la nachrim. Even if you don't plan to eat it, you're just going to serve it to nachrim. Or the davar acher or for something else. Even if it's for scientific purposes, it's still prohibited. It's still prohibited. Even if no one plans to eat it. That's why many feel, you know, in order to become a professional chef, you have to go to culinary school. In culinary school, you have to cook different things. So one of the things you have to cook is basar b'chalav. Otherwise, you don't know how to, you know, a steak. You know why treif steak is much better? Treif steak. People who've had kosher steak and treif steak, meaning in a treif restaurant, because people go to different business meetings. So sometimes you'll have a guy who will come with you to a kosher restaurant. Then the guy will go to the treif restaurant. The steak is 10 times better over there. You know why? They fry it in butter. That's why. Their meat isn't any better necessarily. I mean, there could be the cuts of meat are better, but they fried in butter. So all steak is typically, that's why steaks are so good. Treif steaks are good because they fry them in butter. So it's a typical thing. I mean, it's mamish part of cooking is to know how to mix the cheeseburger. You know, right? It's a staple in America. Donald Trump's favorite thing, right? So you have to know how to cook these two things together in order to be a chef. Oh, let's say I don't want to go, you know, just to culinary school. I plan to be a chef in a fancy restaurant, but I'm not going to eat anything. I just plan to work in the restaurant. You want a summer job flipping burgers in the Burger King. Can you do this? Can you cook milk and meat together even though you don't plan on eating it? Or like in a culinary school, you don't plan on eating it. So most likely the answer is no, you can't do that. Well, according to the Kesef Mishnah, one could argue it would be permitted, just like Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Shavina Rav allowed you to do scientific experiments with basar b'chalav to cooking basar b'chalav together where you don't plan on eating it. Maybe one could have allowed this situation too. And there are those who, you know, start discussing that idea, but in my opinion, there's really too much evidence to the contrary, that perhaps we have to be choshesh, at least basar b'chalav is a separate and independent iser, even if you don't plan on eating it, it would be prohibited, yeah.
So what about if someone were to work as a cashier for a McDonald's, let's say? Uh-huh. Would that count as, since they're getting paid, would that kind of benefiting from milk and meat from the sale of it? Would that be allowed?
Or also, I don't know. You're really benefiting from the milk and meat?
From the sale of it, because that's going into your salary.
If you own the store, yeah, then you'd have a problem.
That money's going to owner.
Right. Well, I'll do you one better. There's a separate issue. So let's say I'm not cooking milk and meat together. Can I be, I'm very good at cooking shrimp. I don't know how to cook, you know, lobster. I don't know. Maybe it's an art or something. Can I get to spend the summer job in the Red Lobster? I won't make the cheeseburgers. They know that the frumma yid, you know, I don't make the cheese. I only cook the lobster. So is that allowed? So there's really a separate iser, midrabanan, maybe, is shaylof is deraisa, about doing business with machalos asuros. You're not allowed to do the profit off machalos asuros, lest you come to nibble from it, right, as you're doing business with it. Typically, people in, there's a reason why caterers are typically, quite large. They typically nibble from that which they're making. So is this called doing business with machalos asuros to work as a chef in a non-kosher restaurant? I don't own the machalos asuros. I'm just working there. Is that really called, doing business with machalos asuros? I don't think it could be benefiting from the basar b'chalav. I don't own the basar b'chalav, and I didn't. I'm not selling the basar b'chalav. I'm being paid to sit at a cash register.
Can we put it this way, that if we're saying that it's just all prevention from eating it, the fact that you're there shows that you're like.
Yeah, I'm sure they give free cheeseburgers to people who work there.
If it's just eating it, then you won't be able to prevent it, like you're saying about the nibbling.
Well, you can't prevent it. Everyone has bechira and can overcome temptation, yeah. It is possible not to nibble. There are people who manage to do that. But yeah, I don't think it would be called being nana from basar b'chalav. I think it would be better to find another job, but I don't think it's a cash register, cashier, and yeah. Not great. I don't think it'd be. It might be called being doing business with machalos asuros because you are doing business with it. So you might come to nibble. But I don't think it's enough from basar b'chalav. Anyway, kitzamayzer. But it comes up in another situation also. It doesn't really happen in America too often, but it comes up in Eretz Yisrael, and that is shaila. It's really an extension of a shaila that's discussed by the Mishnah Brura, who's really quoting from a Piskei Tshuva in Yoredei and Siman Pei Zayin, all because basar b'chalav begins. It's discussed by the Chassam Sofer. They used to burn candles with not wax like we have wax, but it was made out of fat. So you can have one candle have animal fat. But another fat they used to burn was butter, milk fat. So do we have to be afraid that when you put in the candle holder, the animal fat, maybe there's some residue from the milk fat that was in the same cup? So says the Mishnah Berurah, yes. Achmi komakom lechakilo tov lizarim lechalik behenem yeishlo shumanim achem kifamim nisha b'ner shuman sometimes you put in animal fat, v'noyse in chema, and then you put in butter, u'mevashem v'oyva, u'isa basa b'chalav. You're cooking basa b'chalav together. Oh, so you have to be careful. 1 minute. Who's eating this? Who are there poor people going to scoop out the fat from the candelabra to eat it afterwards? Who's eating this? No one's eating it. You're burning it. It's all getting consumed. And nonetheless, it's a situation of basa b'chalav. How could you have basa b'chalav? No one's coming to eat it. So you see, basa b'chalav can apply even if no one is coming to eat it. It's a separate issue in the Torah. Like the Sefer Chinuch said, you're not, this is one of the forbidden mixtures of the Torah. So therefore, they quote in the name of Rabbi Yashiv, it appears in a few places, in Eretz Yisrael, they used to, I don't know if they still do it today. I haven't seen it in a while, but I haven't been in like the Shtachim really to pay attention. That they used to burn garbage. You do this in Yeshiva? Do you still smell Arab Shabbos to smell the burning Arabs garbage? Oh, the Arabs do it. It used to be the Jews were doing it also. I used to smell every Friday burning garbage. It was like, what do you do with garbage? You burn it, okay. So, aside from the fact that right, it destroys the world, but forget about all that. Right? And the ozone layer, and it smells terrible. But forget about all that. What about basa b'chalav? What could be in the garbage? Half, you know, a hamburger. What could also be in the garbage? Half a piece of cheese. Ooh, you're cooking basa b'chalav together. So Rabbi Yashiv said, that's why. You can't burn the garbage, aside of all the other right environmental reasons. And I think it's probably illegal. You can't burn the garbage because of cooking basa b'chalav. And others disagreed. What? No one's cooking basa b'chalav here. It's batel. How much garbage do you have over here and how much basa and chalav is there? So it's probably batel. And it's not really the same as the candle. The candle is a creative burning, right? You're doing something that's productive. So then maybe that's called bishul basa b'chalav. This is entirely destroying it, right? All you want to do is get rid of it. Can we really call that bishul basa b'chalav? And also, probably half of it is not even like edible anymore. It's all nipsal. So by the time the two get cooked together, it's all nipsal. So like that's why the person can discuss, you could have at the bottom of your drain. 1 minute, oh, how do I ever run hot water in my sink? I could have a particle of basar in the bottom together with a particle, especially if you have a garbage disposal. I have a little bit of basar, a little bit of chalav at the bottom. When I run the hot water, I'm cooking the two together. So the answer is not, it's just waiting to get destroyed. Not only, so that's the case of Mishnah Plus. No one's going to come to eat it, of course. It's in the bottom of the garbage disposal, besides all the other gook and garbage and soap and everything that you put on top of it. But it's just its batel and everything, and it's probably rendered inedible already by that point. So all of those same reasons might apply here by the garbage. It's inedible, and but maybe its batel is negligible, and therefore, you know, I wouldn't ask for burning the garbage necessarily. But yeah, I was concerned with that. I don't know if that's the primary concern with burning the garbage. But even if no one's coming to eat it, there are many, many Paiskim who are concerned that this basa b'chalav is an independent principle. And therefore, even though you don't plan on eating it like in a culinary school or something like that, even in a candle that was burning, there were those who were concerned with the iser bishul of basa b'chalav. But this issue comes up in a few other settings with regards to basa b'chalav. The first is with regards to whether or not we say ein bishul acha bishul b'basa b'chalav, meaning once basa b'chalav has been cooked together, are you permitted to cook it again? Or do we say, ein bishul acha bishul, by basa b'chalav, just like on Shabbos, in a certain circumstances, we say, ein bishul acha bishul. Once it's been fully cooked, you can reheat it Shabbos morning. So we say the same thing with regards to basa b'chalav. But do we say, no, it's always prohibited to cook basa b'chalav, even if it's been cooked once already together. So this is a machlekes harishonim, because the Gemara says over here, Masechta Schulin, kuf ches amud beis. If you have a chatzi zayis of basar, and a chatzi zayis of chalav, and you cook the two together, right, so in order to be chayav for basa b'chalav, we said you need a kazayas. Let's say I have half a kazayas. So I'm a rab loika al achilasai. You get malchus for eating the two together. Ve'ena loika al bishulai. But if you cook the two together, there's no malchus. Why? If the two join up together, I have half a kazayas of basa, half a kazayas of chalav, that's going to be basa b'chalav vis-a-vis eating it together, I'm going to get malchus. How come I don't get malchus if I cook the two together? And if I don't get malchus for cooking the two together, why should I get malchus for eating the two together? So the Gemara resolves, what are we talking about? It came from a larger pot that had many kazeisim of basa b'chalav together. Now what did I do? And that was already cooked, says Rashi. Now what happens? I take out the piece of the meat, part of the basa b'chalav stew, and then I take out half a kazeis of the cheese from the basa b'chalav stew. And now I'm going to eat, but they're already both basa b'chalav, a chefta of basa b'chalav. So I eat half a kazayas of this one, half a kazayas of that one. They join up because they're both from the same stew. Chefta, you hear? They're both from the same stew, so they join up for achila. Why do they join up for bishul, says Rashi? Because Bisha, we're not talking about you took out of a pot that was already cooked. We're talking about you're taking raw ingredients, half a kazayas of basa, half a kazayas of cholov, and putting them in the same pot together. So then the two don't join up for Malkus for Bisha. The problem with Rashi is he interpreted the case inconsistently. The same statement said, you get Malkus, half a kazayas of basa, half a kazayas of cholov, you get Malkus for eating, you don't get Malkus for Bisha. According to Rashi, it's litzdadim katoni. That's what he says over here. Shabami yor gador u'litzdadim. Which means the two statements talking about two different cases. Bishul is talking about I took a kazayas of basa, a kazayas of cholov out, a half a kazayas of basa, a half a kazayas of cholov out of a big stew, which all was cooked together, so they're already all basa b'cholov, labeled as basa b'cholov. The other situation is I took half a kazayas of raw meat, half a kazayas of raw milk, it hasn't been cooked, and I put them in a pot to cook together. Then there's no bishul basa b'cholov because it's half a kazayas of each. You need a kazayas of both. That's how Rashi learns the Gemara. Rabbeinu Gershom learns the Gemara consistently, but it comes out with a huge chiddush. Rabbeinu Gershom, and that Gemara Masechta Skulin says, no, what we're talking about is both cases are a big pot, huge stew, a basa and chalav that was cooking together. So if I take half a kazayas out of basa, half a kazayas of chalav out, and I eat the two together, or I eat them one after the other, I've been over on basa b'chalav because they all cook together already. It's already a chefta of basa b'chalav. But if I cook the large pot, then there's no Isa Bisha Basa B'chalav because it's already been cooked once before. And Ain Bisha Lacha Bisha when it comes to Basa B'chalav. Says Rabbeinu Gershom, La'om Lom and Starfi. They don't join up if they're raw. V'hachum Ma'izkina B'bam Yor Gedagla. They was all already cooked together. Shal Basa B'chalav Mevusha. It was already cooked. V'loka Chatzi Zayz Me'ezah. Basa B'chatzi Zayz Me'ezah. Chal B'chazu Bisha Pamachas. Then I cooked them again together. So if I eat them, I'm eating Basa B'chalav is already cooked together. Of course you get Malkus. Because the flavor has already been embedded in one another. But if I cook them, there's no bishul. Because the only time you chai for bishul is if I cook it the first time. A bishul lo lucky the kvar mevushul. Achila lucky the achal kazayis yisur. So you get malchus for the achila, you don't get malchus for the bishul. It's already cooked once before. Rashi obviously believes, even if you cooked it once before, bishul basa b'chalav continues to apply. If I cooked it once before, what bishul basa b'chalav apply? The two have already been mixed together. I've already created the forbidden mix. If it's to prevent me from coming to eat it, the two have already been mixed together. So what has been made worse by the fact that I cooked it? Unless you'll say that according to Rashi, the Isser Bishul Basa B'chalav is an Isser in the Torah. Don't do this activity of cooking Basa B'chalav together, even though it's already cooked before. The Torah prohibited us from cooking Basa B'chalav. It's not about creating Basa B'chalav that I'm then going to come to eat it, creating a mikshol, serving as a prohibition lest I come to eat Basa B'chalav. Because if that would be the case, once it's cooked already, how does the situation made any worse by cooking it again? So the Rabbeinu Gershom clearly feels that it's more of a precaution, or possibly feels it's more of a precaution to eating it. So once it's been mixed already, it's fafalim. What? I didn't make it any worse by cooking it again. But according to Rashi, perhaps the use of basa b'chalav is don't cook basa b'chalav. Nothing to do with eating it. You're just not allowed to cook it. If it was cooked, you're not allowed to cook it again. Who's to say that it's limited by the fact that it was once cooked before? So maybe that's how we could understand this machlokes Rishonim, is they're arguing about what is the nature of the Isa Basa B'chalav, the nature of Isa Basa B'chalav, of cooking Basa B'chalav. If the nature of cooking Basa B'chalav is an Isa Bishol, maybe once it's cooked once, you can still be chai for cooking it again. But if the Isa is, lest I come to eat it, once the two are already mixed, how's it made any worse by the fact that I cook it a second time? So ain't Bishol acha Bishol b'Basa B'chalav. The truth of the matter is, though, one could really say that this issue has nothing to do with what we're discussing. Because it could be that the reason why Rashi feels, the reason why Rabbeinu Gershom feels you're not chayav for cooking basa b'chalav a second time is not because he feels it's a precaution to coming to eat it, it's for a whole different reason. And that's what the Chai Yadim suggests over here, Ois Yudbeis. It could be that when the Torah says not to cook something, so once it's cooked already, it can no longer be cooked again. Meaning, why is it on Shabbos morning you're permitted to reheat food that was already cooked? So the Rashba says it's because it was cooked already. Once something is cooked, it's cooked. You can't be chayav for cooking again. The Torah just doesn't recognize it. Once it's cooked, it's cooked. So if that's the case, so it could be over here by Bishul Basa B'chalav too. The reason why if Basa B'chalav is cooked once, you're not chayav if you cook it again, is not because the Isur Basa B'chalav is a precaution to coming to eat it, so once it's already mixed, you're not making any worse by cooking it again. It's because once something is cooked in halacha, it can't be cooked again. Cooked, it can be cooked once. Not if it can't be cooked a second time. So once it's cooked, it's cooked. That's the opinion of the Rashba. The Rambam feels differently. The Rambam's opinion is the reason why in Bishalach HaBishal B'Shabbos, if you have fully cooked food, you can reheat it Shabbos morning, is because you haven't accomplished anything. You can cook something a second time, but on Hilchos Shabbos, you're only chayiv if you create something that's that's a creative activity. If I did something that's productive, cooking something again is not productive. That's where the Rambam feels. If I have something that's only partially cooked and then I cook it further, you're chayiv on Shabbos. You can't do that. Halachically it's cooked at a half, or halachically it's cooked at a third. Nonetheless, the Rambam feels you can't cook it further. The Rashba disagrees. Rashba says cooked is cooked. If a halfway cooked, you know what's called Michael Ben Drusoy, we discussed the other day, right? Ben Drusoy was this ganef who was on the run who would eat things partially cooked. The yeshiva guys. So he'd eat things partially cooked. So if once it's cooked halfway or even a third of the way, according to some Yishayim, you're chayv on Shabbos already. So the Rashba held, once it's cooked a third of the way, half the way, you can't be chayv for Bishul again on Shabbos. You can reheat it and even cook it further. Once it's cooked, it's cooked. And the Rambam felt, no, cooking, you can cook something a second time. The only reason, and therefore, according to the Rambam, once it's half cooked or a third cooked, you can't cook it further on Shabbos. Even though it was cooked at a half or a third, you can't cook it further on Shabbos. You can cook something a second time. The only reason you're permitted to reheat food Shabbos morning if it's fully cooked is because you haven't accomplished anything. You haven't done anything productive. It was already fully cooked before. But in Hilchos Bishul Basar B'Chalav, one could argue that that even if it was already cooked before, and you're not accomplishing anything productive, if the Torah said, don't cook Basar B'Chalav, maybe that's a separate, independent Isur, not to cook Basar B'Chalav, and even if you accomplish nothing, you're not allowed to cook it again. So maybe everyone agrees that Basar B'Chalav, cooking Basar B'Chalav is not a precaution to coming to eat it. The machlokes over here about whether there's bishul achabishul basar b'chalav is a machlokes with regard to hilchos bishul. Once something is cooked partially, or once something is cooked once, can I be chayav for bishul again? Does the Torah recognize a second cooking? So the Rabbeinu Gershom held like the Rashba, like the Rambam, that yes, the Torah does recognize a second cooking. In hilchos Shabbos, you're not chayav for that if it's fully cooked because you didn't accomplish anything. Hilchos Shabbos is a different standard. You have to do something that's productive. In hilchos bishul basar b'chalav, maybe that's not the case. The Torah asked cooking basar b'chalav even if you accomplish nothing. You're not allowed to cook the two together. So therefore, the Rabbeinu Gershom feels even if you cooked it. He said, ain't bishul achar bishul. See, he holds, once it's fully cooked, once you did an act of bishul, Torah doesn't recognize the second act of bishul. And the Rashi felt the Torah does recognize the second act of bishul, meaning maybe this has nothing to do with what the nature of basar b'chalav is, has to do with what whether or not the Torah recognizes a second bishul after an original bishul. Can you cook something that's already been cooked, which is a machlokes by Hilchos Shabbos? And maybe that's a machlokes over here too, whether there's bishul achar bishul, basar b'chalav is, does the Torah recognize a second cooking after an original cooking? One other place though, perhaps we see this, I don't think that issue, ain't bishul achar bishul, is really linked to this, but this seems to be, what is the nature of the isur basar b'chalav? It's how much do you have to cook it in order to be chayiv? How much? So the Gemara says, in Masechta Shkuah Daf Kuf Ches, you have to cook it, so much so that people would eat it. So Rashi there says, it has to be nishbashel kol tzarkoi, fully cooked. Meaning not the way a yeshiva guy would eat it, halfway or a third of the way, like Ben Drusoy. It has to be like your mother would serve it at the Shabbos table. It has to be fully cooked. A restaurant would serve it, fully cooked. The Ritva says, what are you talking about? In Hilchos Shabbos, how much does it have to be cooked in order to be chayav? Maichol ben derusoy. That's the minimal cooking in Kol Torah Kula, Maichol ben derusoy. Some people would eat it, that's good enough to be chayav for Bishul. So why is that not good enough for Bishul Basar B'Chalav too? So clearly the Ritva is equating Bishul Basar B'Chalav with Bishul of Shabbos, that they're both a prohibited activity, nothing to do with whether, right, you can't cook on Shabbos even if no one's going to eat it. So the Ritva held that this has nothing to do with the precaution. They're leading to, a precautionary measure, less people come to eat it. This is an isur bishul, an act of, forbidden mixtures, and creating the, a forbidden mixture of basar b'chalav together. In which case, that already happens. Once people could eat it, at Michael ben derusoy, like we have in Kol Torah Kula. However, Rashi held that it has to be mavushal kol tzarko. Why does it have to be mavushal kol tzarko? So the Brisker Rav explains in his Kiddushim and Meseches Menachos, the Rav has this in his Shiurim and Yerida too, that it's because Rashi feels like the Kesef Mishnah. That the whole reason you're not allowed to cook basar b'chalav together is lest you come to eat it. I'm not going to eat Michael ben derusoy. You're not going to eat Michael ben derusoy. None of us are going to eat this. Yeah, there's one guy out there who might eat it, right? Some guy, that's a guy who never goes home for Shabbos, right? He might eat this, but most of us are not going to eat this. So therefore, says the Biskarav, according to Rashi, if the whole ease of bishul basar b'chalav is lest you come to eat it, Oh. So no one's going to eat it unless it's the Mavushal called Tzarko. When it comes to Chol Shabbos, your Chayv already Kamachol Ben Derusai. Chol Shabbos is an Isra Bisho independently. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. That's not what's required. That's not the same as the Isra Bisho Bas Bachal. That's just a precaution lest you come to eat it. So therefore, if it has to do with something that I might come to eat, it has to be Mavushal called Tzarko. So this seems to revolve around this issue. But again, this is a machlaika. So we seem to have two opinions, two trends of thought. What is the nature of the Isra Basar Bachalav, cooking Basar Bachalav? Is the nature of the Isra cooking Basar Bachalav, you know, this is one of the forbidden mixtures the Torah said not to mix the two together, and therefore the Torah said don't cook the two together, maybe even if it's been cooked once already, I can't cook it again. And then it should have the standard of cooking of, Michael Ben Drusai, and even if I don't plan to eat it, it should still be prohibited under a scientific setting or in a culinary school. Or maybe, like the Ketz Mishnah told us, Isra Basar Bachalav is, lest I come, as a precautionary measure, lest I come to eat it, because I have these things in my kitchen all the time. The Torah needed to establish a siyag. In which case, it might only apply if I plan to eat it. It might only apply if it's Mavushal called Tzarkai. You know, it might not apply if it's already been cooked together and once before, and I'm not making it any worse by cooking it again. Each one of these issues is a debate, so we probably have to be machmir in both directions. All right, Chaim Mishnah.